Welcome to Sober Dad Crew, the podcast where we talk about all things dad, sobriety, recovery, parenting, music, tattoos, and more. For more information or to get in touch, visit SoberDadCrew.com. My guest this episode is Alexander Jones. Alexander's a dad, illustrator, designer, and ultra runner. We talk about everything from sobriety, tattoos, religion, and even mimes.
All right, Alexander, how are you doing tonight?
You know, I'm doing all right. It's nice to have the end of a week for sure. But yeah, it's doing well.
And I'm going to jump to this right away because we were just chatting about this beforehand that you don't go by Alex Jones because, you know, in another world, you could be a conspiracy theorist.
I years ago started going by Alexander, kind of twofold because my best friend in high school and college was also a tall redhead musician named Alex. So that was complicated. And then Alex Jones being the other part. So started going by Alexander. And recently when Alex Jones had now kind of owes a bunch of money to people, my wife texted me out of nowhere. I was like on a run or something like that. And she just says, "We don't have that kind of money." And nice. I was like, "What are you talking about? Like, what?" And then sends me a link. It's like, "Oh, he owes them $9 billion, like however much it was."
Cause he's like, a total asshole.
Yeah. So
you're or not, however. And I think your wife sounds pretty funny and awesome too. So like that's good.
Yeah. It was funny, but yeah, so definitely Alexander, that's for sure.
And I switched. I was Steve for years and years and years, I think through high school and college and somewhere along the way. And I think my oldest is 20.
Okay.
Maybe around when he was born or right after he was born. And I don't even totally remember the reason. I thought maybe it made me sound more professionally sophisticated or something. But all the tattoos maybe are a giveaway that I'm not, or maybe I am professionally sophisticated and it has nothing to do with tattoos or whether I shorten my name.
Hey, something like that, you know?
Yeah. So how many kids do you have?
I've got one, just one. Yep. A little almost 4-year-old named Lucy.
Nice. Yeah. Four is a very fun, extraordinarily busy age.
Yeah, she's kind of wild. I love it right now because she has like bits and like knows she's funny, and like that I think it's the funniest thing in the world, where we will just sit around and just say just funny phrases back and forth to each other. And it's like, yeah, she'll just do these little bits and like walks in the room, does something, and then like kind of gives you that look like, ah, and
that's rim shot.
Like that's your cue to laugh. All right. And just continue. Like it's a great, great age. I absolutely love it. Yeah.
My 7-year-old also, he is very, very funny. And like with puns. So I do like a lot of like puns and wordplay. And that guy for like a 7-year-old is very, very, very clever. I mean, his standing joke right now is, do cows prefer cheese or pepperoni pizza?
I don't know which.
We got to pick one or the joke fails.
I'm going to say pepperoni.
No, the utter one. So good. So
that's,
good.
That's
it's like plastic,
good.
Unless you don't choose.
Right. I'm sorry.
Like a difficult guest and like not choose the joke that I'm trying to tell.
Oh, you, man, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you always think you wanted to be a dad? Was that like one, like I kind of always knew like way back, but I get not everybody's that way or not every circumstance. Sometimes it's like, oh, whoa, going to be a dad.
No, it's kind of I've been thinking about that question since I like have listened to the show, that, you know, that's made me think like thinking about that question, the whole story. And, but at the same time, for a long time, I've kind of said, you know, I didn't know if I wanted to be a dad. My ex and I were kind of going back and forth on, having kids or not. I sat down with a friend one time and he told me that he and his wife decided not to have kids. And I was like, oh yeah, that's an option. I kind of forgot that, 'cause I was raised in the church and like as a Christian. And it was like, we got married young, you get married, you have kids. That's just what you do.
Yeah.
But so it was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like you don't have to do that.
Yeah, no one actually makes you do that.
Right. Well,
however, the way the country is going, it seems like there's certain people who are trying to basically make you do that now. But
so I kind of say, I didn't know if I wanted to be a dad, but all I want in the whole world is to be Lucy's dad. I kind of also joke, like, still up in the air if I want to be a dad. But the only thing I care about is being Lucy's dad, and it's the best thing in the world. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's a dope answer. I like that answer.
Right on. Good.
You know, and it's interesting because I have 4 stepkids, mm-hmm. and sort of biological kids, but I all view them the same. So it is interesting along the way when I met my current wife to be like, oh right, I'm kind of starting over.
Right.
I was like looking at the end, not really the end game, because with a 20-year-old, you like helping him with his resume and stuff, but it's mm-hmm. it's a way different. Your influence is mostly done.
Right.
I think by the time they're 8, your influence is probably mostly done too, maybe 3. But it's an interesting thing to sort of go another round. I mean, I feel like I'm better mm-hmm. at it. In part because I feel like I have a partner, like a lot of the time, uh-huh. my older ones, I was single dad with all uh-huh. the like stresses of finance and that came with that. Though, my ex, their mom, we have a great relationship. She was at my wedding. Mm-hmm. She has actually a 4-year-old who I call my reverse stepdaughter. Because there's not like really terminology for some of these things. She calls me Uncle Stevie, but it's like, oh, when you actually get along and your families mm-hmm. get together, you're like, oh, what is your kid's mom's new kid with her new partner? Like, what do you even like label that? So I was reverse stepdaughter. That seems like the most accurate thing.
That's a great term. I really like that. Yeah.
Put it on a t-shirt or something. Sell it.
Right on.
So kind of what's your sober story? I know you mentioned you are an illustrator and you worked in the beer industry doing some cool labels, because you get to do cool labels and art when you work for, beer companies. I do marketing for an architecture firm. We do some cool stuff, but not that cool.
It's kind of a weird story. I would not think, like 6 years ago, Alexander would not have guessed that this would be current Alexander. I worked in the craft beer world for 5 or 6 years. For better or worse, was a regular at a place, in kind of the early craft beer boom locally. They got busy one night. I just kind of jokingly was like, hey, you need any help? And they're like, actually, yeah, we could really use somebody to wash dishes. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I jumped behind the bar, washed dishes. And then the next day got a email that was like, hey, everybody, here's the schedule. And I was on the schedule. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Well, it's a good thing I'm a freelancer right now. And I could do that. And then slowly like worked my way up, became assistant brewer. And all the while kind of did design work inside the brewery and whatnot as kind of an ad hoc in-house designer, and left that, went and opened a brewery, did all the branding for that, all the labels for that. That was super fun. Got to do collabs with other breweries and other brewers, and that was great. And I really had a lot of fun, really enjoyed it. But looking back, it was a lot of escapism, for sure. During that time, my mental health went down. My previous marriage kind of became real rocky. I was making bad decisions, just all sorts of stuff. And it kind of all came to a head in Thanksgiving 2020, I spent at the Mayo Clinic at their inpatient for like suicidal ideation. I was in a rough place. You know, it was definitely the best place I could be, was in this establishment. You know, Mayo Clinic is like world renowned, known for their medical, like everything they're doing. And I make a lot of jokes about pretty much everything.
I'm down with that. Also, if you're Googling your symptoms, Mayo Clinic's website's like a reasonable place. At least you're getting reliable information to like hypochondriac things.
Exactly. Yeah, no, they've got all the information. They're the best in the world. They're terrible with food. It is standard hospital food. That was one of the weirdest Thanksgivings I've ever had. That's for sure. But it had all kind of, you know, culminated at that. And I left Mayo, ended up getting divorced, struggling through opening this brewery with two friends that I had kind of been homebrewing with and that kind of stuff. And it was great. And like kind of the beer world was my life. I was going out every night, staying out way too late, drinking a little bit too much, just kind of always living in a little bit of a hazy fog. Definitely an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And that just led to opening this brewery and then just more bad decisions, more just being in a rough place, and ended up parting ways with the other owners. And then I took a year off and was just like, from working, that kind of thing. It's like, all right. But just continued to drink and party and whatnot. I had met my, my now wife. She was a bartender at another brewery. We met kind of through the beer scene, and we just kind of continued on. And then, you know, with some rough nights and some rough mornings, that kind of thing. And I was kind of getting sick and tired of it after 6 years in the industry. You just kind of get tired of beer. The novelty of the next cool craft beer kind of is kind of gone. And, after I left that, was just kind of tired of it. I picked up running, and just mainly because my wife sleeps in later than I do. And I was just bored in the morning. I'd get up, I'd feed the dog, I'd take the dog for a walk, I'd read, I'd meditate, I'd draw, and it would still be a couple hours till she'd get up. And I was like, all right, I gotta do something else. I wonder if I can run a mile. So that I found an old pair of running shoes, ran a mile, and was like, all right, cool. This sucked. This was terrible. I am 30 pounds heavier.
I too picked up running. I had to stop because I hurt my knee and got tired of it always being sore. But I remember I did like the couch to 5K thing. Now 16-year-old, do you know Girls on the Run? Do you know that organization? So I was her like guy. And I was like, oh, I better not totally suck at this. But it got me out of my head.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, I feel like when you're trying to get mentally healthy, finding a way out of your own head, because it's like there's good brains in there, but it's like a dark, murky place in my brain sometimes.
Yeah. No, definitely. So I was kind of a runner, just kind of on my own and kind of freelancing a little bit, still going out in the beer scene, partying, drinking, whatever. My wife and I just kind of, at the time, we were just dating. You know, we just kind of lived it up a bit. It was a lot of fun. And then I could just tell that it was taking a toll. We were both kind of tired of it. But it was still, you know, how we would cope for things. My daughter ended up in the hospital, and, you know, it was just like, I every night would leave the hospital, come home and crack a beer. And it was, you know, it wasn't like I was drinking a bunch and whatnot, all those nights, but it was just like, okay, this is my coping mechanism.
Right. I talk about it. You've heard me say it on here. It's like, it was my medicine. Like the number of times I was actually been drunk in my life is pretty small. One of them was I used to work in the wine industry here and going out with a winemaker and having the dinner, and he just kept pouring.
Oh,
and I didn't notice until I stood up at the end and I was like, fuck.
Yep.
I am so drunk. And it was like, I had to go back to the hotel and I was like sick and I had to work the whole next day.
Yeah.
It was like a miserable feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had like being in the craft beer world, you know, it's everybody's buying rounds and whatnot. And like, it can be an amazing place. It was a great community for me for a long time. But yeah, I just, you know, it was, it just became such a habit. Like you said, it was just kind of medicine. And I, yeah, it was kind of sober curious and was like, I, you know, I'm kind of tired of this. What should I like, what's kind of the next thing? How do I not do this anymore? And I had gotten even more into running and I was like, I'm going to run an ultra marathon. So I signed up for a 50K, which is like 31 miles. I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to do this 50K. This is going to be terrible, but I think, like, I really enjoy running. It's kind of my thing now. It's, you know, it might be kind of a replacement, but that's
a better replacement,
lot better. And so about halfway through that first training block, I went out on a Friday night. We live pretty close to a brewery. We went out, had a couple beers, nothing wild and crazy. Didn't get drunk. Didn't go wild. Woke up the next morning to go on a run. And I felt just a little foggy. And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't hungover. I wasn't, you know, I was still able to get up and run the 10 miles or whatever it was. But I was just like, if I'm doing all of this work to achieve this wild goal of running this ultra marathon, why would I do this thing voluntarily that's just hindering my training?
Yeah, it's like running with an anchor.
Yeah, everything just like felt foggy and like felt like you were running through pea soup kind of thing. So yeah, I got up and was like, yeah, I think I'm done for this training block. I'm gonna, you know, it's the race is 100 days away. I've never gone 100 days without having any alcohol. You know, I'd done a dry January, or usually I would do a dry February because it was the shorter month. And like maybe a sober October.
Hard.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Just got to do it to like check the box. They're like, I don't have a problem. I can make it a month.
You hated the leap years though. You're like, fuck it. One day.
Yeah. That was the one where you're just like, it's not always this day.
And the 29th is a fake day of February.
Yeah, exactly. But so it was 100 days until the race. And I was like, you know what? Okay, cool. I'm going to do that. I'm going to stop drinking for the rest of this training block, see how I feel. And just through that 100 days felt better and better and better. Not even just running wise, but mentally, physically, emotionally, just a lot better. And after the race, I was like, that was awesome. I'm going to, you know, I want to keep running long, weird distances, you know, for actual events or just for fun. So I want to be able to do that. Like, no matter what, I want to be able to wake up and just go. I want to, like, I'm not going to reintroduce this into my life. It's hindering what is way more important to me. Like my three things that I want to do is hang out with my daughter, hang out with my wife, and run a stupid amount of miles. And alcohol was putting kind of a hindrance on all of those. So yeah. So I, you know, I'm at this point, I'm almost 10 months. I think it'll be 10 months in a couple of weeks or in a week or two.
Yeah.
And with no desire to go back and have another drink or anything like that. It's really helpful. My wife also decided to give up alcohol. She's doing some like mental health treatment kind of stuff. And it was just like, no, that's kind of the same attitude. Like, no, I'm trying to work on this big thing. And having these beers is just a hindrance to being able to think clearer and feel better. Why would I do that. And like, nobody's forcing me to do this. This is an optional thing. So yeah, no, there's no reason to. And that's been really great to have each other coming to a alcohol-free lifestyle separately for different reasons, yeah. Like 22 days apart. I always kind of joke with her. I'm like, oh yeah, no, the 22 days. Yeah. Oh,
you fit it in February.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's basically a February.
You're in the shortest month. That's incredible.
But yeah. It, you know, that's been great to kind of be on that journey together. I have a partner that's also doing that for their own reasons and being support systems for each other. There is ever a time that it's like, man, you know, it would be really nice to just go be on a patio right now, drinking a light lager, just like doing nothing. It's like, yeah, you know what? That does like in theory sound good, but like, what's the best part of that? It's the being outside.
It's the patio chilling.
Yeah, it's the patio. It's drinking something cold and it's just like enjoying the day. It's like we can do that. Like we've got bubbly water. We've got, you know, we're not soda drinkers, but like we got soda if we want to be a little wild, you know? But
do you do the NA beer thing?
I do. Yeah, that's been a cool thing. I was an ambassador for Athletic Brewing for a little bit. Cause I really, really enjoyed their stuff. I've kind of, less and less I'm into it. The further I get away from like real beer and the beer industry, the less desire I have for it. And we're close to a pretty big brewery here in Minnesota, that they just put out two really great NA beers. Which is wonderful because they're a partner for the event company that I work for. So I know at all those events, we automatically have an NA option, which is fantastic.
Just interviewed last week. I haven't posted it yet. The owner of the Empty Bottle in Chicago.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Who's sober. And he said their NA growth in the bar is 600%.
I would totally believe that. Like, Gen Z doesn't drink. Yeah. It's a great, I've talked to a lot of people that it is. It's, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, I want to go out, but I don't want to drink a bunch, but I still kind of want the enjoyment. Like that whole thing. Like it's wild. It's such a rapidly growing category. Gen Z doesn't drink or isn't drinking. And so it's, you know, the craft alcohol world is changing and shifting, and the craft beverage world changing and shifting. And so it's really interesting to be outside of that industry now and watching that happen. It's wild.
Yeah. And I've interviewed, you know, a number of people who are in that industry, all the bitter folks who were, you know, wine people in California who then started this non-alcohol bitter thing. They're super cool. Chris Marshall with Sands Bar was kind of like the guru of the noun alcoholic bar space, community building space. So there's just cool stuff out there. I mean, I just used to rock the seltzer and the club soda. Cause I, you know, like I go to bars, it doesn't bother me. I get that other people can't do that even with options. But for me, I go to shows and it's all good. And I just get whatever, but it's sometimes nice. Like we keep Seedlip in the house and that's kind of nice. If you want to make a fancy drink, Some of that is flavor. Some of that is kind of the texture of the liquid.
Right.
Is good. So do you consider yourself like an alcoholic or having had substance use disorder? Like, how do you like define that for yourself?
I was talking about this with my therapist, just the other day. It was like, my brother and I were texting earlier and he like asked me that. He's like, hey, this might be a weird question. And I was like, nope, not at all. I would say I had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol and used it as an unhealthy coping mechanism, for sure. And I have found better ways to cope that are better for me, better for my family, better for my career, my community. I don't know if I would say, you know, substance abuse disorder or alcoholic. But it was just, I saw a potential future that kind of would probably have that label to it. If I, in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, it was kind of the slow roll. And it's like, I don't like what this looks like. And like I said, those three things that I like to do and are the most important things, it's like, that's just that get in the way if I continue down that path.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I've told a story on here about sort of feeling like my grandmother kind of came down and was like, that road that you're going on is the wrong way to go. Uh-huh. And being at a place where the pivot wasn't hard.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, like you, I was like, I'm done. This is not helping me. This is not like everything in my life that's good now pivots on that decision. You know, my ability to be a good dad, my ability to run marketing in a pretty intense job. And like, you know, it was a crazy week. I was on vacation last week. And as one of the owners said, you came back into a sandstorm, you know, stuff didn't get accomplished the way it was supposed to. And that's life. And it happens when you go away. But it was like, oh, my God, now there's 2 weeks of stuff to do in 1 week.
Yeah.
And we got to do it. That's just the way it is. It's got to get done.
Yeah.
And I got to be like fresh and smart and able to do it. And I need to be home and be present for my family and be a dad. And like, you know, I still read to the 12-year-old every night for bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like bedtime's sacred, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
It's like the time.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. No, we always give my daughter kind of the option of like, okay, who do you want to read to you? Do you want daddy or Rara? And 90% of the time it's daddy. And it's like, my wife is never offended by it. She's like, yeah, no, that's your guys' like little time. You've got your little books and your little nighttime jokes and like that. Like, yeah, that's a time. It's like, I wouldn't be able to show up if that evening, you know, it was like, oh yeah, having a beer, like whatever. That, you know, I want to be 100% in every moment, that I can be in. And that's the biggest thing. And you can't do that if you're making choices and doing things that don't allow you to be fully present.
Yeah. And being present matters. I mean, the older two, when I was single parenting them, I put them to bed separately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were with me half time. And so I was like, when they're with me, it is all things. And so the younger one would go to bed and I would stay with her until she fell asleep. And then I'd go to the older one. They each had that time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did I have a lot of time for myself? No. But am I really tight and close with them as they've gotten older? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes from being present.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Let's pivot just a little, talk about your art. So how did you get into art? Like you have what I think is a pretty unique style. I'll have to put some pictures up on the website.
Yeah.
I'll put your link up and people can go. Cause I think you have a pretty interesting, unique style.
Right on. Yeah. Thanks. I was always kind of drawing and always kind of a little bit of a creative kid. Preferred doing that to almost anything else. My mom still has somewhere a piece of notebook paper that at like 5, I drew this like perfect portrait of Goofy, out of like a Mickey Mouse book. And she thought I traced it. And I was like, no, I drew this. She's like, no, you traced it and put the paper like over the book. And it was like, oh no, this is way bigger. Like that you, oh my goodness, you're talented.
You didn't actually trace it.
Yeah. I was like, no, I drew this. Come on. So I've always loved doing art, doing kind of design-ish stuff. So then naturally I went to school to be a youth pastor, instead of an art major, and enjoyed that. That was fine. But in my schooling, somebody asked me, they were like, well, if you want to be like, why are you doing this? And I was like, I don't know. It's just, I just like, I was, was a Christian at the time and was like, yeah, this is what I got to do. I got to be in ministry. And just like, wasn't, it was just kind of what I had to do. So I signed up for a design class when I got to college, with one of my best friends. And we signed up for it only because we didn't know how to read the college scheduling system, that we thought it was only one day a week. And we were just looking for like an easy class that we could just fill our schedule. Cause it said design 101 TH, which to us meant Thursdays. Okay. But in college scheduling, that means Tuesday and Thursday, H being Thursday. So we showed up on the second day of class, just a couple of dumb goofballs, and took this design class and really enjoyed it. And at the end of it, the professor asked me what I was doing for kind of the month-long May term class. And I was like, oh, I'm doing a youth ministry thing. And she was like, no, you should take computer graphic design. The class is full, but I'll get you into it. So I took it, really, really enjoyed it. And the teacher for that class was like, I think you're like, you've got some talent. I think you'd be good enough to work in a big city, not in this small rural Iowa town. It's like, cool. Sounds great. So I moved to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and went to art school up here. And you know, haven't, besides my little detour, it's kind of funny. I did like that detour into the craft beer world. And that was like, that seems like such a different time of my life, especially now. But did that and now back into doing design. But yeah, I love it. I'm constantly sketching, drawing, coming up with ideas. I converted this weird little room in our house into my studio. Yeah, it's great. It's definitely a space of like mental health. I'm able to kind of visually journal a lot of things. That's one of the things I did when I was in Mayo was, in our unit, every room had, like the room that you stayed in had one wall that was just a giant whiteboard. And usually they'd use that for like the doctor would come in and kind of write notes and be like, okay, well, this is your plan for today. Do this thing. But I used it as a visual journal. So every morning we had two, dry erase markers in the room. I had a purple one and a red one. And every morning I'd get up and with the purple one, I would kind of draw or add on to this drawing that I was doing of kind of how I was feeling, how I slept, what I dreamt about, what I was thinking about. And then throughout the day, I'd come back to the room. And when I learned something or had another epiphany or just another growth moment, I'd come in and with the red marker, I'd add to that drawing. And it ended up being just this kind of cool, huge mural. And, yeah, so it, you know, I've kind of continued to use my art and design as a piece in my mental health journey and mental health journaling and expression. Yeah, I try to put a lot of me into each piece that I'm making.
Do you know hyperbole and a half?
That's super familiar. Yes.
You should check that out because like it's her story of chronic depression.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. I mean, it's funny. It's fucking dark. It is dark funny, but it is funny and like brilliant and really like beautiful.
I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, you should check that out because it's like, it's this, you know, it's a graphic novel, but it really like tells that story in a really cool way.
Yeah, definitely.
Can we talk about the religion thing a little bit?
Gladly. I am an open book about it.
Yeah, so I'm sort of curious, you know, like I grew up Unitarian Universalist, which is like sort of fake church a little bit. Though we did go, we were all visiting my folks in Maine because it was winter break. And so I went back there for like the first time. In a really long time. And my mom has Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Which is rough, but she's like still in the choir. And so we like, you know, we like filled up a row.
You know,
there's like six of us.
Right.
And there were a few people there, you know, like I grew up in that church. I was in the youth group and all that stuff. But man, I was like, and the older two talked about this too. It really hit us, like seeing my mom there,
uh-huh.
like the choir was singing Memories. And I was like, oh my God, I was like,
uh-huh.
it really like kind of nailed me. So I get sort of that formative, you know, there's community and community is important,
right.
but then like, what are the other sides of like, you know, I didn't grow up Christian and I have sort of my own vibe on that. I do like mm-hmm. think spiritually and struggle yeah. with the notion of sort of higher powers. But for me, the notion that sort of somebody died for my sins, I'm like, I don't like get that. And the political side of where it is like oh, yeah. hard for me.
Yeah.
So like, you know, what's your kind of journey through that?
Yeah. No, you saying community, that's like where I really latched on. I was kind of a little bit of a weird kid. I think, you know, I think I was probably trying to be a little weird on purpose a lot of times and like didn't really fit in. I wasn't a jock, wasn't really into sports. I didn't really care about pop culture much. I didn't really understand what was going on. Just kind of a weird kid in my own right. A neighbor invited me to go to Bible camp. And I was like, sure, whatever. And they sold it as like this, like, yeah, man, because me and this neighbor kid, we would rollerblade around the neighborhood all the time. He like sold it as like, yeah, dude, like all afternoon, you can just do whatever you want. You can play basketball, you can rollerblade. Like it's super cool. You can do whatever you want. And like in the morning, you know, there's breakfast and there's like kind of like a church service kind of thing. And then, but like all afternoon you get to play and like hang out. And in the evening, there's like fun, like songs and skits. And it's like, oh dude, so great. And I went and it was nothing like that. It was super fun. I enjoyed it. I ended up working at this Bible camp for 6 years. Enjoyed it. It was formative part of my life. There's still bits and pieces of it that like will come back to me that I'm like, oh, I'll make some joke to my wife who did not like grow up going like really as like ingrained in the church. Grew up going to church, going to Bible camp a little bit, but not like a weird Bible camp kid like me. And there'll be things that I'll say or try to explain. She's like, that's not right. That's weird. like I was in a traveling mime drama ministry. Where we acted
there's
out.
A lot to unpack.
There's
with
so
that.
Many things to unpack on that
so
one.
So much to like that might be its own episode.
we acted out the story of creation and the like the fall of humanity through the life and death and resurrection of Christ and beyond. To like modern songs. So like,
did you have like the white gloves and all the stuff?
No, we were in.
I wish there was a video of this because I'm very intrigued,
dude. I can find you one. No, we were in like if we were on like bad guys, we were in all black with like
okay
red and black face paint and that kind of thing. And then the angels were in colored shirts and God was in white and a big robe and that kind of thing. I always played the devil because I had tattoos. So
yeah, I that mean, was an all easy of us one for tattoos. Me. We're like satanic to the core. So
exactly. But so it was wild, but like, so I worked at Bible camp. I grew up doing that. I had a lot of fun doing it. I can't talk bad about it. I have lifelong friends from that time, who still, you know, we don't believe the same things anymore, but we still very much care about each other, are invested in each other's lives, still pour into those relationships.
Side note, we need more of that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. As a culture right now, we need more of that crossing over with folks you don't always see eye to eye with.
Definitely. Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. But yeah, did that. I was in a worship band for a while, all this sort of stuff. I was really active in a couple different churches. I met my first wife at Bible camp. Like it was a great weird thing. And then, you know, as I grew up and kind of thought for myself a lot more, just kind of asked a lot more questions, I was really like, this doesn't make sense to me. And kind of, now like the thing that people say is like kind of deconstruction. They kind of people deconstruct their faith. And I kind of went through that and ended up kind of on the other side of saying like, yeah, no, this isn't for me. I don't believe this. And that's all right. That's, you know, that's what it is. My best friend, has his MDiv, works. He's a Christian, but definitely is somebody that asks questions and digs into deep problems and deep questions and, you know, isn't a part of the religious right and that kind of thing. So I definitely, it's weird. I still have like a lot of connections into that world. My family still goes to church, is religious. My brother is a former pastor. Like it's just kind of still very much ingrained and entwined in my life. I still listen to a lot of those old bands that I listened to in youth group and that kind of thing. But now those words are just words instead of like these big declarations and that kind of thing. It's a weird journey, that's for sure.
Well, and I think now in a lot of ways, like Christianity's gotten this bad name because of this sort of this evangelical kind of white supremacist, like what's mm-hmm. going on the far right, I would argue is totally non-Christian.
Oh, right. Completely. It
like goes against the basic messages.
Yeah.
Like Jesus was a rebellious dude.
Right.
He was anti-establishment from the core. Also not a white guy.
Exactly.
Just for the record.
Right.
So it's really, and not about, it's not this like personal thing, right?
Right.
Like a lot of this evangelical stuff is like, I have to like save myself. I'm like, no, that's not the deal, right? The deal is to make the world better.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the number one thing is love your neighbor. And it's, you don't see a lot of that. I do have to say like my family is very, very good at the justice, the thinking beyond, you know, the religious right kind of thing. And very much active in those conversations, that community, and standing up for what's right, standing up for people's rights, and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's definitely, like I said, it's still part of my life and intertwined in my life, here and there, but it's just not something that I do anymore. And it's just another piece to that life that I have lived of craft beer and youth pastor and touring mime drama ministry and punk bands and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of shows how the journey matters, right?
Yeah.
And you can redefine yourself, but you don't get to remove pieces.
Right.
Because the pieces are there.
Right.
They can't be an excuse, but they're part of who you are. But like the journey just really matters.
Yeah.
Like to who you become and who you want to be. Like, I feel like I'm always just striving to like be a better dad, be a better husband, like mm-hmm. be better at work, like be a better citizen.
Yeah.
Like, how can I help people in my community? Cause it's, you know, where my office is in Ithaca, it's like rough, man.
Uh-huh.
It's near the unhoused encampment. People are really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Overdose deaths are like climbing here. There's some like bad batch of coke and fentanyl blend. It's like rough out there. And like, uh-huh. how do we help people?
Right. Right. And it's, you know, it's, that's where I think it's beyond religion and beyond that. It's, you know, looking at people as people. And I think that's also where I've, you know, you said, you know, your journey, your story, it's, you know, it's a part of you. That's where I look back and I'm like, you know, younger Alexander, you made some bad choices and like, you're kind of a dummy. You know, I refer to my old self as that asshole I used to be. And you know, it's like, but that guy made some some questionable decisions, made some bad choices, moved some wrong directions. But like, that guy's also the one that's here and is currently healthy, running, is a dad, cares about his wife and his kid, cares about his job, his career, like has all these passions and has a clear mind and can look back at that and go, man, I was dumb, but I wouldn't, it's not like a regret and I wouldn't change it. I wish things were different and had I made different choices? Definitely. But those choices that I made got me here and I love where I am now. And so,
well, and I think it's a reaction. Like we all stumble, we all make mistakes. We're all not the person we want to be sometimes, but it's how we react and respond and adjust, course correct, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Which is way easier to do when you're not like having 2-3 drinks a night to kind of like be like, oh, that wasn't that bad a day. Well, no, it was kind of a shit day and I got to sit with that.
Right.
And then I got to go tomorrow and figure out how to course correct. Or, you know, I lost my cool at the kids tonight and I don't like that. So I'm going to go apologize now because I, you know, to me, if you expect kids to apologize, parents to apologize. Everybody, no one's perfect.
Yep.
You know, but it is like people make mistakes. But for me, how you respond to your mistakes is really like a show, how it shows your character.
Right. It's, you know, I own up to, you've got to own up to the mistakes you've made, the things you've done, and just say, that was me. I'm sorry. That was wrong. And I'm taking that time and I'm learning from it. I'm growing from it. I'm taking it. I'm sitting with it and going, okay, why did I do that? Like thinking beyond just the, oh, I did that. That's terrible. Or like, this is just my reaction. But yeah, just being more mindful in every action, interaction, reaction. And that's so much easier when you've got a head that's clear, that is not like, oh man, that sucked. I got to think about that. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm down in a few whiskeys. I'm down in a few beers, where you think about it more and more, except you're like, well, it probably wasn't that bad.
Or it was that person's fault, not my fault.
Right, exactly. Like, well, they shouldn't have walked over to me. Instead, just, you know, you have control over yourself and that's it. And owning when you make mistakes. And I go to bed every night knowing everything I did that day and waking up every morning knowing everything I did the day before. And that is such an amazing feeling. It almost, like, it's cheesy, but it almost feels like a superpower of some sort. That's like, I know what has happened the last 10 months very easily because there hasn't been anything that's made it so I can't.
Clarity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what, this is a new topic.
Yeah.
What was your first tattoo? And I hope you say like it's a tattoo of a mime or.
It is a tattoo from a Bible verse. So, you know, kind of right there. I've got, I don't know if I can like really show it to you, but I've got some birds on my arm right here.
Oh, yep.
I got four birds that are, just kind of dove birds. They're based on a Bible verse that talks about, you know, being cared for and being having value and that kind of thing. The designs themselves are kind of, these like abstract kind of birds. I got them, you know, right after my 18th birthday. They're small. It took maybe 5 minutes for the tattoo. And it made the
20 minutes to set up for the tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was more nervous about like, as they were doing everything, they're like, dip, 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 dip. All right, you're done. But it made it ring true even more that, you know, it takes 10 years to get your first tattoo and 10 minutes to get your second. And I was like immediately hooked.
I got a sun on my shoulder and now, you know, pretty much full sleeves, full chest, like chest with the sternum. That's a painful tattoo.
I have 100%. I have a half done chest piece and a half done back piece because I did not enjoy those. And you know what? I decided that's fine. They're done enough. I got other tattoos to distract from those ones not being finished. So that's fine.
Gets expensive too.
That it does. I haven't been tattooed in a while because I now work for a nonprofit. Haven't been tattooed in a while. / there hasn't been like anything. Not that tattoos always have a reason, because I would say a vast majority of mine don't. But there hasn't been any like super good reasons. I still want to get one for my first 50K that I did last summer. That was a race called the Big Eddie. And I want to get like a traditional tattoo heart with the banner through it that says Eddie on it. I don't have my wife's name on me. I don't have my daughter's, but I'm going to get the name Eddie tattooed in a heart somewhere. That's for
sure. Yeah, I have the older two, so I'm going to get the younger two. I don't believe in tattooing romantic partner names.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a I just think it's like it's going to like make things fail. I don't know. I'm superstitious about that. I just feel like it's like Johnny Depp and all his sundry issues now with his Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Tattoo.
I mean, I'll be honest. I do have a portrait of my wife, Sarah, on my arm that I got while we were dating.
Well, there you go.
It's one of those that like, if you know that it's her or like based on a photo of her, you're like, oh, I see it. But if not, it just looks like a cool girl with a bandana. Like, it's abstract enough. And then I have, I do have a tattoo for my daughter, because her name's Lucy from Chronicles of Narnia. So I've got the Cair Paravel castle kind of as like the cap for a sleeve.
Do you have any cover-ups?
I have a couple. The main one that my family all kind of laughs at and fits with our conversation is I had like a Holy Spirit dove like stained glass window tattoo that I got covered with a like American traditional like boxing tiger.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it looks super rad. I really like it. And you can kind of see some of the tattoo through the other one. So like that's kind of neat. And then my hand tattoo is actually a cover up. I have the logo from the brewery that I helped start right here that was just tiny, like the size of a dime, and got that covered up when I left the craft beer world because I just did not need that reminder. So, of course, to get a cover up, you need a way bigger tattoo. And I saw that as a nice excuse to get my hand done. So
I know I've not gone the hand route. I had a big pinup cocktail waitress, like the old 50s style.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't that well done. The guy who did it did other stuff on me, but then I didn't realize he'd become a drug addict, so his work really fell off. So it wasn't really that great, and faces are really hard anyway.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, but it felt weird as a dad of daughters to like have a pin up, and then it was cocktail waitress, so I got a big like anchor.
Oh, cool.
Kind of traditional. I like the traditional style. I have like a lot of grayscale stuff, which lasts really well, but also some sort of traditional stuff. I have a bunch of stuff based on my favorite books.
Nice.
It's like a whole half sleeve. So
that I have my half sleeve over here is all literary. It's so I love that. I love like that's one of the few things that I've done right in tattooing or in a couple spots is like theming things. Like if I could go back, this is another one of those, like go back, like I'd stop 18-year-old Alexander from getting those birds in the middle of my forearm and say, whoa, let's think about it. Like you want sleeves. Let's plan something cool. Right. Or like go in and say like, I want it patchwork of this style. Not like blip. Let's just throw some things on there.
All the book ones for me, you know, there's a piece for each of the books. And then I really trust this guy, DJ Rose, who's at Halo Tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
in Syracuse, New York. Shout out to DJ, also a straight edge guy.
Right on.
One of the founders of the band Earth Crisis.
Oh, cool. Right on.
Yeah. And, you know, we did all the big pieces and then I said, just fill it in.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he kind of went, and it was a very cool collaborative. Like, I love the that process of getting tattooed, of finding the thing.
Yeah.
And like that one in particular, because I like knew the books I wanted and I knew like what element they're there. I mean, a lot of people don't know there's like a book called 1Q84 and it's the woman travels to this sort of parallel earth where there's two moons. So I have like this two moon tattoo. So there's some of them are kind of subtle.
Uh-huh.
But it was such a cool process to put that together.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah, mine's just like my left arm is all just line work. So like that kind of all brings it together because it's kind of book covers of a few different of my favorite books that are just like the line work. I have the kind of like my favorite one over there besides the Lucy tattoo is the carousel horse from Catcher in the Rye.
And oh, like nice.
Just the line work for it. And it's like... It works really well in that style and on my arm and kind of in that area. But yeah, good on you to actually like get it all together and then piece it together nicely. Mine's just been like piecemealed. And so like Care Paravel is coming out of the back of this carousel horse and it just kind of, it's great, but it is what it is.
Yeah. I think cause I went into it knowing, you know, and I have one from when my grandmother passed and some things like that. But I got a dragonfly last year because that was one of the things I kind of wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that reminds me of my grandparents around their house growing up. They lived in Washington State and we'd go out there. And there just weren't like a lot of dragonflies in Maine. And I was super fascinated with dragonflies as a kid.
Interesting.
Because they're really beautiful.
Yeah.
A little menacing, but also really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I've got, that's funny. I've got tattoos for both of my grandmas. Two for one of them. I convinced my mom to get her first tattoo. My mom, my brother, and my sister, and I all have my grandma's signature.
Nice.
And yeah, so that was great. And it was my brother's second tattoo. And he'll probably never get any other tattoos. But I love it because both of his tattoos are matching tattoos with me. Because for his 18th birthday, I bought him getting matching tattoos. So it was just like, it was funny. But yeah, I got my one Thanksgiving. We jokingly said to my mom, I was like, oh, so we're all going to go get Grandma Joy tattoos this week, right? And she was like, yeah, let's do it. It's like,
is she like fully tatted now?
She talks about it all the time. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm going to get a motorcycle. I'm just definitely like super badass and like,
yeah, love and hate. You
know, yeah, exactly. She's got her knuckles done. Like all that sort of stuff.
That'd be amazing.
That I now have a really good picture of my mom just fully tattooed and
just drop it into some AI.
Yeah,
make it
exactly. I'll just do that. That's perfect.
Yeah, it's funny. Like you'll see that sometimes on Instagram or whatever. People like tat up the Mona Lisa or something.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
All right, you don't have much to do with your time, but you can do that.
Right on.
Back to parenting, for a sec before we finish. Like, any words of wisdom or things that you do that you feel like. That work for you that might be good. Like I talked to one guy who's like, I put my cell phone away every night when I get home until my kids asleep, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's something I was just thinking about the cell phone thing. Just the other day I was like, yeah, I need to be better at that. Cause like I'm all about mindfulness being in the moment. And that's something that, doesn't help with that. I give Lucy the space to be goofy and just be the goofy, silly kid that she is. And just expression. And I almost feel like, I'm kind of in an improv class with her that like I'm always trying to just kind of yes and her. That like, you know, if she's in that goofy, silly mood, I'm just like, yeah, okay, cool. And then this, and then what? And then the koala is doing what? And now, wait, okay, so Little Monster, your imaginary friend, is doing what? And where's it going? And now Little Monster has a cat. Oh, the cat's on your shoulder. Oh, but like just yes anding, just one upping, and just letting her be just this goofy, silly kid. Cause I love that. And I think that, you know, her middle name is Joy, and she just brings so much joy to me, to my wife, to like my family, to her community, to my ex and her family. Like she's just this little radiant ball of light. I mean, Lucy means the light. And it's, yeah, I let her be her as much as possible. You know, we've got rules and set things that, you know, we make sure that, you know, it's not just Animal House kind of wild and crazy, but I get so much joy out of just having fun and playing with her. Cause I think that builds the trust, that builds the relationship to be stronger and stronger and stronger. If it's, you know, I know that I can be silly with Daddy, and I can also come to him when I am sad, and I can also, because I can come to him for anything. And so I think that just, you know, that builds up that repertoire and that connection.
That's really beautiful. And I think, cause I have older kids too, so much of that relationship building is front loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't do what you're doing now when she's four, mm-hmm. when she's 16,
right.
It's not going to magically appear.
Right. Right.
It just isn't. And I tell people that all the time, you've got to put in the time early on.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have these strong relationships later.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Wow, this was awesome. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. This has been super fun. I always love chatting with rad people, and always good to talk about my old miming days.
Thanks for listening. For more information, for links to any music or books we talked about, or to buy some Sober Dad Crew merchandise, please visit soberdadcrew.com.